You're listening to the Ministry Grow Show, brought to you by Reliant Creative, the creative agency for gospel-centered ministries. Find out more at reliantcreative.org.
Welcome to the Ministry Grow Show, a podcast dedicated to helping churches and ministries grow and make more effective impacts for the kingdom of God in an ever-changing digital world. Whether you're building and growing a gospel-centered ministry or leading a church, if you want insight into the strategies, struggles, challenges, and successes of other ministry leaders, you've come to the right place.
Welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. Today on the show, we're going to be talking with Brady Shearer. He's the founder of Pro Church Tools, Social Sermons, and Nucleus. Brady, thanks for being on the show, man.
Pleased to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about Pro Church Tools, Social Sermons, whatever you want to focus on, and maybe just kind of highlight why you guys exist and what do you do?
Yeah, so company's been around for about a decade. We've got about 30 people on the team now, and the easiest way to sum up what we do is we help churches navigate the biggest communication shift in 500 years. So we have our own podcast, YouTube channel, and we're very active on social, kind of teaching churches how to navigate the world of digital. And then we have a couple of products that you mentioned as well.
That's awesome. What's your background? How'd you get into this space? What made you want to serve the church in the digital and social media space would be a good thing to highlight.
Yeah, so I'm Canadian, grew up in a really small Baptist church, so small that we didn't have like a PA system. Like we didn't preach with a mic. We had one acoustic guitar. We did have an overhead projector, but there was like nine of us. So really small church. And you know, like there were no real kids. Like it wasn't really for me, but really good family, good Christian values. And I got connected to this really, you know, young and happening Pentecostal youth group in high school. And it was in that youth group where I kind of first felt like ever I belonged with, you know, people my age. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted that same feeling. I wanted to be like a part of that. So I went to school to be a pastor, and I have my degree in youth ministry and theology. In my second year, you know, you start doing your internship in seminary, and I got put in this church plant. And they basically handed me a camera and a MacBook, and they're like, hey, we want you to be our media director. You are young. So I'm making videos, I'm doing social. And basically, as I'm learning these skills, and I'm like, okay, I'm learning these, I'm handling it, I'm figuring it out. I go back to class and I'm looking at my friends and I'm like, guys, it's gonna happen to you. You're gonna get to your first placement, you know, worship pastor, small town senior pastor, youth pastor. And they're gonna be like, hey, you should run our Facebook page also. I'm like, you're going to have to learn this. So I started a YouTube channel and I started a blog and a podcast, and I'm just teaching everything that I'm learning. And then I kind of have this realization that I don't really have the relational bandwidth to be a full-time pastor. Like I'm not going to be able to give in youth ministry context, like enough to these kids that they're going to need from me. I'm just not built like that. But I really, really wanted to work and serve churches. And so that was kind of the idea for Pro Church Tools. And then eventually, you know, we launch a product, hire a couple employees, and then, you know, here we are 10 years later.
That's awesome. So did Pro Church Tools start as just like this educational resource, like content development company?
Yeah, you can go back to, you know, our YouTube channel. First video, I think, is 2012. And it's just me on a green screen because I'm recording in my one bedroom apartment at the time, like newly married. And I'm like, here's how to use a DSLR camera. And I'm holding a Canon T3i and I'm teaching about aperture and white balance. And the first thing we ever did was this thing called the Church Video Series. And it was 40 videos on YouTube, just teaching every single thing about like using these cameras to make videos in your church. And that was, yeah, the origin story.
That's awesome. So you started in this space as a YouTuber, man. Is that what I'm hearing?
I mean, I guess we didn't have YouTubers that back then. It wasn't a thing that existed. There was YouTube, but there were no YouTubers, definitely not in the church space. But you know, the blog was really big and instrumental too. The YouTube channel now plays, you know, a much bigger role. Like I have my, you know, I have my 100K plaque behind me now. I don't have my degree up in this office, but I have that, which, you know, kind of tells you how things went for me. But it was really like blog posts and search engine optimization and organic search traffic that grew the audience because people would land on our articles. It was me. And my mom was proofreading because I wasn't that great at writing at the time. land on our articles. And then there would be a place to add your email address to join the email list. And that was really, you know, how we built the audience from the beginning and probably still our most valuable asset today, that email list.
That's awesome. What are some of the challenges and struggles you've run into as you've built, I don't know if you'd call it an agency, but we'll just say that for purposes of this question, and really working in that church and ministry sector?
It's probably most on the operations side. I really could only imagine working with churches. It's what I love to do most. And churches, like every industry, have, like, you know, their little pain points that are challenging to work with, but I almost never think about those. I mean, the great irony is I didn't feel like I had the relational bandwidth to be a youth pastor, and now I lead a team of 30. So I do a lot of, you know, conflict resolution or just leading people, putting them in places to succeed, you know, managing issues, you know, leading through the pandemic was, of course, you know, unique in its challenges. And then, you know, the typical things of like balancing work and family. You know, my wife and I got married the same year that Pro Church Tools began. And when began, she was working at insurance full time. And then she would go and work retail in the evening. And she would come home to me and I'd be like in my bathrobe on my like laptop. Like, oh, I bought another theme, sweetie. It's WordPress. And she's like, okay, this is ridiculous. But our dream always then, you know, very normal 20-year-olds, not at all, was like, we just wanted to like have a house and have a family and like live like the suburban life. That was what we always wanted. And so, you know, balancing just like leading a team and doing something like I am a very ambitious individual. And then, you know, balancing that with just, you know, being a very involved dad and father and those types of things is, you know, always like a little give and take. It's not really a problem to solve so much as it is a tension to manage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe to give some context for today's conversation, because I've followed you for a handful of years now, and you have a pretty significant voice in this Christian church, Christian nonprofit sector around all things digital. Can you maybe share with us why you think digital and the digital space and social media are so important, right? We both seem to talk a lot about this greatest communication shift in human history. What do you think the implications are and opportunities are for the church in this space?
Well, it really just comes down to attention. You know, I say attention is the most valuable commodity that your church can possess. You know, of course, what we want to compel is life change. You know, maybe all of our churches quantify it, qualify it, articulate it a bit differently. But at the end of the day, we want to, you know, move people to love God, love people, making disciples. And that life change can only happen if we first have people's attention, right? Like, why do we meet in person at church? Well, to rub shoulders with each other and the community aspect. But if we're being honest, so much of our Sunday morning services are dedicated to like, okay, we have your attention now. Let me share the good news with you. Remind you of, you know, what Jesus has done in your life. Let's sing together. But the biggest portion of our Sunday services for a typical church is sit there, I have your attention. Here's the good news. So the digital world is just an extension of that. And then to a greater degree that would have been, you know, unimaginable 2 decades ago, you know, useful context is just thinking about the things that didn't exist prior to 2005. You know, the first one that I always reference is Google Maps. You know, if you wanted to go on a road trip to see me up in Canada, you need to go to MapQuest and print off 27 pages and staple them together. And then, you know, you got hopefully a good co-pilot in the passenger seat and they're on page 8. Like, oh, it's the interstate. We got to take the exit here. We got to get to the Peace Bridge to go to Canada. Well, that's a thing of the past now. You know, Spotify, Dropbox, Uber, YouTube, all the search engines, but also all the social platforms, you know, music. Music is just free now. I was talking with my wife the other day and we were remembering the days where you had to buy a song on iTunes and, you know, you can only get like a 10 second preview of it and you'd buy it and maybe it was 99 cents, maybe it was $1.29. And then you're like, oh, this song is no good. Well, there's no returning it. You paid $1.29 on that song and so be it. And then if it was a premium song, maybe it was like $2.99 to get early access because it was, you know, like a big new Taylor Swift single or something like that. Now all music is free. Like the amount of change and disruption that has hit every single industry. And, you know, I think churches have a really unique advantage in this space, which is something that we try to remind ministries of, because it's very easy for us as churches to say like, you know, woe is me. We don't have the resources. We don't have the time. We don't have the talent. But what I do tell churches is like, if you look at other industries, maybe, you know, the dentist office down the road or the real estate agent or the lawyer, you know, they have to do their teeth cleaning, their selling of homes and their, you know, writing of contracts. And then they have to think about, oh, we need an online website. We need to like maybe create content. We need to like, you know, get our voice out there. And churches are one of the very few industries where our senior leadership, they're creating content from scratch to share with their audience. That's like the bulk of what so much of what we do happens each week. Well, that's so easy to translate to online. And so it takes what we already do, and online lets us amplify that message in many ways with zero cost monetarily, which is just an amazing opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you look at the stats around what, how much time people are spending in digital, you know, seemingly like 8+ hours a day is where our attention is in those spaces and places. And this idea that the church shouldn't be, or maybe doesn't spend as much time in that places as we could or should, there's just incredible missed opportunity there. The reality is that's where people are putting their time and energy and focus and attention, like you talked about. And so we have to figure out, I believe the church has to figure out how to engage and be functional in that space, if we want to have any relevancy in culture, right?
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think maybe people are listening and like, ah, oh, you know, but like, you know, social is so toxic, and you know, like it's such a dark place. I do find it amusing. You know, we'll have comments on our videos, and they're like, the church should never use social media, and I've stopped responding like this because it didn't really ever seem to create anything productive, but you know, back in the day, I'd say, he said, using social media. Yeah, and you know, like if you feel like this was an avenue for you to critique it, are you not then ironically, you know, demonstrating its value? And I think, you know, in a world that is becoming increasingly polarized, I think that the church's role in bringing hope to these platforms is all the more crucial. You know, I think... you know, I have really enjoyed the advent of discovery algorithms over the last couple of years, and discovery algorithms kind of spearheaded by TikTok, but now being emulated by every social platform from Facebook and Instagram to YouTube and even Twitter now. The idea is, hey, we're not going to show you content based on the social graph. These kind of have taken the place of social graph algorithms, which would show you content based on your friends and family and personal connections. Discovery algorithms show you content it's based by your interests and your watch history. And I have found great value in those things because what's happened is I have been stumbling across content and creators and ideas that have been incredibly useful for me that I would have never known to search out. And you know, the negative side of this is like sometimes you see a video that you don't want to see, but I have found at least these discovery algorithms to be very receptive to my own kind of like wishes. So if there's a video that I'm like, ah, this isn't relevant for me, you know, I hold down on the screen, I say not interested. It's the prerogative of the algorithm to show me content that I want to see. And so if you're seeing a bunch of videos that you don't want to see, either you've told the algorithm, you've yet to tell the algorithm that you don't want to see it, or let's be honest, you do want to see those videos and your algorithm's telling on you a little bit. But I came across a dermatologist that led me to like getting a bunch of my acne scarring fixed because I didn't even know that was a thing. But that all started with a creator, you know, a dermatologist. There've been great meals that my family now like enjoy on a weekly basis because I came across like, you know, a chef or a cook that made recipes that made sense for like my family and our goals and our dieting preferences, you know, fitness, home design, travel, like trips that we've gone on that have been so greatly improved because we found a creator that had already been there. And then once you watch one, I'm headed to Portugal next week. Like, once you watch one video on Portugal, to, you know, the discovery algorithm is like, he's going to Portugal, show him all the videos. And then you're getting like, oh, now my trip is much improved because I knew of these things to do that I otherwise wouldn't have stumbled across. Now apply that to the church world. We got a DM from a pastor that we work with at Social Sermons, you know, where we take churches' sermons, we turn them into social media posts, we publish for them. So this church had published their social sermon and they got a DM, and it was from this man. They anonymized his name, but he was like, hey, I saw this video, and then on my lunch break, I decided, you know what? I want to watch this full sermon. You know, at the end of every social sermon, which are like, you know, 60 seconds in length, we're like, hey, watch or listen to the full message online. So this guy takes his lunch break and he listens, and he said to this pastor, he's like, you know, I just haven't been following Jesus the way I know I should. And this like message has reawoken that in me. Like, I'm ready to recommit my life to Jesus. I'm gonna be at church next week. That all started because of a discovery algorithm that just happened to show this sermon clip to this person. Mm-hmm. And that led to, you know, this life change. And that's one small example. And people are like, well, the comments, the likes, like what's the point? Every single one of those digits is a real person on the other side. And sometimes they'll send us a DM, but most of the time they won't. And maybe most of the time the life transformation isn't happening. It's like that dramatic of a degree. But every time you see something like that, you're hearing the good news one more time. Maybe you're already a follower of Jesus, but you're reminded of God's goodness, or you're being introduced to faith in ways that you weren't. I grew up in that. Maybe you didn't. You're hearing it for the first time. Like, there's just so much good that can come if we actually put in the effort to do it. And again, for us as churches, the effort required is so much less than almost every other industry. We already got the content. We're doing the preaching. Most of us are filming it now because of the pandemic, right? Yeah. So now let's just bring that to social.
Yeah, most churches have some level of a media team, some shape or form of a media team post-COVID now, or at least the gear and stuff that's necessary to create that kind of content. So why not? What do you think are some of the biggest reasons why the church is struggling to use digital effectively?
I think there's just really practical ones. One, like, we do wear many hats, the people of us that work and serve at churches. And so, like, we don't feel maybe like we have the expertise or the knowledge required or just the time, right? Like, we're focused on in-person ministry. We're focused on good things. How do we choose between this one good thing and this other thing? I think another big aspect is, you know, the average senior leader in church is 60 plus Protestant in the U.S. So, like, I really empathize with that position, because imagine, like, okay, I'm 32. Let's imagine I serve in ministry for 30 more years. You know, I've been in it for 10. Let's say it's 30 more. So I'm 40 years in, and, you know, I'm really proud of, you know, all of the, you know, the race that I've run thus far. And then a big thing happens in culture, and suddenly everything is different. I have all these now like 20 somethings coming to me like, hey, I know you've never done ministry this way, but you need to do it this way now. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, okay, first of all, I've been doing it for 40 years and we've been pretty fine to this point. Now you're telling me that like everything needs to change. Like, that's a really difficult thing to even be able to like interrogate that idea, because the older we get, the more entrenched we become in our ways of doing things, because we've learned that these ways work. And it's very difficult to confront that maybe they don't anymore. How do you even properly evaluate that? And we always tell churches, mission over method. And it's very easy for our methods to kind of take the place of mission and step in as idols, because it's like, you know, that old saying in church, well, we've always done it this way. Well, that's not the mission. We've always done it this way is a description of our method. And that method might be the best way to accomplish the mission, but maybe it's not. And just because it was the right way last year or last decade doesn't mean it's the right way now. And I've even started to experience this a bit myself, you know, when TikTok came around, because TikTok was the first social platform that wasn't made for my age group. It was a Gen Z platform. I'm a millennial. So it came around and I'm on it and I'm like, vertical video full screen. Okay. All right. Turn the phone sideways. That's easy enough. I'm like, wait, why? I have no friends on this platform. I don't need friends. I'm just swiping. Well, you know, where's the sidebar? No, it's full screen. Okay. Well, why, what is this video about? Okay. Like, it was so foreign. And then you'd make content and it wasn't at all how I had ever made content before. And there was this really steep learning curve for about a year, even for me. And I, you know, do this professionally. Now, 3 years later, I mean, I feel very, very comfortable creating vertical video and publishing it to all the platforms. And I very much understand the medium. But I didn't learn it as a 23-year-old, and it wasn't made for me as a 23-year-old. I kind of got to it, like, you know, after Gen Z had had it for a couple of years. And so it felt very foreign at the beginning. And so that's how it must feel all of digital for these senior right. leaders, except magnified to the nth degree. And so there's practical reasons that make it difficult, which is why, in many ways, the pandemic forced folks to get involved when they were kind of, you know, holdouts before. So a lot of us have like gained those skills out of necessity. But I always encourage churches like, hey, you learned basically every skill that you have right now. At one point you didn't have it and it was unfamiliar and it was uncomfortable and it was maybe a little intimidating because you had no frame of reference for it and you figured it out. You can figure this out too. And if you need help, that's what we're here for. You know, we're right. creating all the free content. We're teaching you, you know, we're holding your hand. I started knowing nothing and I learned it. So can you.
That's good. Well, hey, Brady, let's take a moment to hear from today's sponsor. But when we return, we'll continue our discussion with you on Pro Church tools and social sermons and all things digital. Are you looking to grow your ministry but don't have the money or marketing knowledge to make that happen? There's good news. Google offers an advertising grant to churches and ministries that is worth $10,000 per month. This means that if your ministry is a 501c3 nonprofit, you are eligible to receive $120,000 per year in free advertising dollars. This allows you to place ads at the top of Google search results pages and drive thousands of visitors to your ministry website every month. Our sponsor, Click Nonprofit, helps your ministry acquire this Google ad grant and then manages your Google ads to ensure you get the most out of the grant. Schedule a free consultation at clicknonprofit.com to learn more about how this grant can help your specific ministry. Mention the Ministry Growth Show when you sign up to get 20% off your first 3 months of management. All right, welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. We've been talking with Brady Shearer from Pro Church Tools and Social Sermons and Nucleus about all things digital. Brady, as we get back into today's discussion and conversation, I want to shift the conversation a little bit. One of the things I've noticed in the ministry world is that we seem to be using maybe traditional business marketing tactics and slapping them on the church, just one-to-one transfer straight to the church. We're striving towards 1,000 views on our weekly sermons, and then we slap the label of success on that content when we've reached that traditional metric, right? And digital is this incredible tool. We've talked about that already, with incredible opportunities to engage with audiences where their attention is, right? And we've established that in our conversation today. What are some of the ways that we can think differently about our success metrics in digital? How can we reshape that and not say, hey, we got 1,000 views today, let's call that discipleship?
Well, I think you're hitting on maybe the most important thing that I talk about. And it does seem like on every podcast, we eventually get to this place. Now, normally I'm the one driving that and you've kind of, you know, led me to the proverbial altar. So, you know, appreciate it. But I got a comment this week on a Facebook reel that had gotten some, like, you know, organic traction beyond my existing audience. And it was talking about, hey, here are some traits that are correlated with smaller churches in this, you know, study that spanned 20 years. And here were some traits that were correlated with larger churches. And the person responded and said, who cares? Like, we just need to focus on saving souls. Because the survey, it looked at things like attendance. It looked at things like giving rates. It looked like things like volunteer rates. Diversity amongst congregations, generational disparity or rates amongst different congregations. And understandably so, this person was like, okay, it's just all about souls won for Christ. And I responded and I said, I'm on board. How do you quantify that? And the reason I asked that was because, and I think what you're getting at here is emblematic of one of the biggest challenges of What we do as churches, we deal in existential matters of life change. And definitionally, those are very difficult, if not impossible, to truly define. Now, I claim to know Jesus, but you can't know that. And no one listening can know that. And I can't know that your claim to know Jesus is genuine either.
Right.
No one can truly know. The heart is deceptive above all things. And so what we're doing is everything we do, this is not unique to digital. We have been doing this in the church, you know, since I was born and surely generations before, is that what we have are these substitutes for things that are meant to be like ancillary trackers of what we're trying to accomplish as churches. So maybe that's attendance, butts and seats. Well, that's very, very similar to 1,000 views. Does 100 people sitting in the pews at church constitute life change? No, it could, but there's no way of knowing if it truly happens. It's just a substitute. And you know, what we've done is we've created a simple prayer in a lot of our faith traditions where you can say it, and then we say, that's the sinner's prayer, check, commitment to Jesus. Mm-hmm. Well, there's nothing magical about that, you know, formulaic script. It's just something that we've created as a stand-in, because otherwise, what do we even have?
Right.
And so first, understanding that challenge exists and kind of trying to loosen ourselves from these traditional metrics that we've put way too much stock in, and then trying to create a more holistic measurement is really the starting place for doing anything, I think, successfully in person or online. Mm. And so what we recommend churches do is they kind of create their, and there's a bit of work that goes into this, but the churches that we've seen do this, and I got an email this week from a church that had done this all, and they're going to begin tracking it over the next 5 weeks. We've seen really remarkable insights come from it. So we recommend, and we have a free template for this you can find if you search, you know, Brady Shearer Church Growth,
okay.
It'll land on an article that has this as a spreadsheet you can download and customize.
I can add it.
But we recommend, certainly. So we recommend churches kind of create this next steps tracker. And the first thing that you can put in there is indeed church attendance. And you also want to put in baptisms. And if you have, like, you know, a way that you quantify salvations in your church, whatever it might be, put that in. And put in, you know, connect cards returned. And put in a number of people enrolled in small groups. And put in number of people attending your next steps or, you know, kind of introductory course to the church. Just every single thing that your church does where a person could be getting involved. You know, what we want are active participants, not passive spectators. And every church is different. Most of us have like roughly 15 of the same. But every single thing that your church does that would have someone getting involved in some way where they have to take a next step, put it in the next steps tracker. And then provide a score to each one. So maybe church attendance is just worth 1 out of 10. And maybe a commitment to Christ is a 10 out of 10. And maybe attending a small group, you know, is a, being a part of a small group for a season is a, you know, a 5 out of 10. It's totally your call on how you want to quantify each one. But you want to basically give them a score on, like, you know, how big of a deal this thing seems. You know, oh, baptism, let's make it a 10 out of 10. And then you want to track those things each week for 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. And the purpose of this exercise is to basically get a score at the bottom that is not just 105 people attended this service, 108, 92, 87. Oh no, summer slump, back up to 105. Oh, it's back to church Sunday. Oh, 127. That's one metric, but we want to get more. Why? To get the perfect measurement tool? No, it doesn't exist. But to get a more holistic tool that is going to be closer to an accurate representation of our church's growth and health. And one way I really like to hammer this home is I say, let's imagine you're a church of 100, and a year from now, you're averaging 100. Well, by traditional metrics of attendance, your church has not grown. But church attendance cannot tell you if the people in your church have become more like Christ in the last year.
Right.
They can only tell you if the number of people that have left have been replaced by new people, and if that's a net negative, net positive, or net zero. So we really have no insight into the true health or growth of our church if we're considering that the people that come every single week, who presumably are becoming more like Jesus as our discipleship and sanctification gets closer and closer, well, we have no insight into that. So a tool like this provides us a more holistic and accurate insight into that level of our church. And then what it allows us to do is when we track it for months, you know, that first month's numbers mean nothing because they're unique to your church and they lack any type of context. So, oh, we got a score of 380. Is that good? It means nothing. But after several months, you can start to see the ebbs and flows. And then you can get insights into, well, what did we do around this time that resulted in this? you know, typically in our churches, we're like, oh, look, more people at Christmas, more people at Easter, fewer people in summertime. And we understand those seasonal trends, but that's really just seasonal based on like the church calendar, the two big events, and then people go away in the summer.
Right.
It isn't really an insight into our efforts as the staff and leadership of the church. So if you spend 3 months and you're like, you know what, we're going to really make a push for small groups. And then you can see that in the tracker, what you can say is, hey, we have actual evidence, demonstrable data that says the efforts we put in to get more people into small groups, which we know are valuable for X, Y, and Z. Sure, we can't really quantify community because that's the whole point, but more people are in small groups because of these efforts. Okay, what can we learn from that? Or inversely, we did these things and they didn't result in any more life change based on this next steps tracker that we have going. And I know these numbers can be like a bit, oh, it's all, you know, numbers in a spreadsheet. Like that's kind of boring for me. You know, if you're like me, you love it because I'm a sicko like that. But what the purpose of this exercise is to basically steward our church's resources well. Mm. You know, like it's not fun to manage the budget for a lot of people. Again, sickos like me, we like doing budgets. But you have someone in your church doing the budget because you know you need to be a good steward of the donations that are being given to your church, and you want to keep your doors open. Well, in the same way, all of our efforts and energy, sometimes it's treasure, sometimes it's time, sometimes it's talent. It's all resources that we need to be good stewards of. And this is kind of like the analogous version of a budget, but instead of money, it's our time and our talent. Mm.
That's good. Slightly off topic of what we've been discussing, but still relevant to the digital discussion. Do you, I guess it's just a shift in how we're, where we're going with this conversation. Do you believe that real disciple making can take place completely in the digital space?
No.
Interesting. I've struggled with that. Like we've done a lot of work with disciple making organizations inside and outside of digital. And there's a lot of different approaches. There's a lot of innovation taking place in digital, a lot of really cool, exciting things. And I've struggled like in interacting with those strictly digital disciple making organizations, man, can disciple making, true disciple making actually take place completely in a digital online environment? I don't know. I don't know the answer. And so it's interesting to hear.
I guess in the hypothetical, anything is possible, right? Like hypothetical.
Yeah, yeah.
Could it be done? In the typical context, you know, in the way that that question is approached, it's like, you love digital. Does that mean like you don't think in-person attendance is important? It's like, no, not at all. I think like, you know, online does things that offline cannot and vice versa. And they are at their best when they're working in harmony together. You know, now the, this could easily become a Bible college conversation. Like if they never heard the name of Jesus and they never heard, like, could they be saved? You know, we would spend 2 hours on like, right. Well, you know, the skies proclaim the work of his hands. Technically creation would confess that a creator exists. Okay. Like sure. In the, I'm more looking at the practical side of things and it's a very common misconception. Like, oh, digital boy. He thinks that's all that matters. And I'm not in that camp at all.
Yeah. I would lean towards your camp as well. I just don't, I've seen some really innovative things in the space. I've seen organizations that have done digital really well and have incredible engagement, so that I'm sold on the opportunities that exist around engagement and meeting people where they're at, right? We talk about attention already today a lot. There's incredible opportunities to meet people where they're at. Right. When I am in the darkest depths of my depression, where am I most probably likely running in this day and age, especially you and my generation and younger? Right. I'm probably running to Google and going, how do I deal with my depression? I'm struggling with suicide. How do I deal with this? Right. And if the church is not prepared to meet people and intercept those searches, we've missed opportunity to step into need and to be the hands and feet of Jesus in that place. Now that's a statement about the opportunities that exist in digital around engagement with an unreached, with the lost, with the unengaged, opportunities to engage with our own congregations. But to turn that, this is where, as we've talked with disciple-making organizations who do work in the digital space, what they all consistently run into is how do we turn that engagement into true, real disciple-making, right? Like Jesus models. I'm going to walk with 12 guys, specifically highly hyper-focus on three of these guys for 3 years. And when I'm done with them, they're going to be trained up, raised, and equipped to go do the exact same thing that I just did, this reproducing multiplicative disciple-making process. Can that happen in digital? Like you and I are both digital guys going, I don't know. I don't know. I've got some major questions on whether or not that can take place. So that was just like a side note that I wanted to have with you, who I highly respect.
You got me on the record. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just as a guy I highly respect within the digital conversation in the church, it's an interesting thing to think about and discuss and talk about and have conversation over. So, yeah. Let's transition a little bit again and discuss storytelling. What part does storytelling play in your work with churches?
I mean, it's foundational to everything that we do. You know, when I was discussing learning TikTok, what I'm doing is I'm learning how to storytell on a new platform. Mm-hmm. And social media, video format, podcasts, YouTube, vertical video, pulpit, whatever it is, all we're doing is telling stories. And, you know, the common thing that I return to in our work is when I say, hey, what you're trying to do is identify the intersections of faith and culture. You know, what we're doing online, we're trying to reach people, but we're also just trying to reach our existing folks connected to our churches. Identify the intersections between faith and culture. And, you know, sometimes people will say, you're using a business tactic. And I'll say, no, I'm trying to use a Christ-centered tactic. Because if you look at the Synoptic Gospels, you know, more than 35% of the time that Jesus is speaking, he's using story. And he's using story in the form of parables and parabolic teaching at the intersection of faith and culture. Hmm. You know, he doesn't just come to someone and start talking about like the nitty-gritty of the kingdom of God. He says, the kingdom of God is like this. And he uses something that's accessible to everyone. So, okay, I'm going to talk about forgiveness, but I'm going to talk about it in the context of the prodigal son. You know, I'm going to talk about the lost coin. I'm going to talk about the parable of this and that, because these are concepts that everyone who hears me is going to understand. And what's so amazing about storytelling and why I love it so much is two reasons. We talked about attention being the most valuable commodity that your church can possess. Well, guess what? The singular greatest way to earn and keep attention is by telling a story. I have been looking across at my screen at Zach, and I saw when I started telling the story about the pastor that got the DM about the person that listened to the full sermon, he was paying a lot more attention than when I'm going, well, the intersection of faith and culture, definitionally, in the next steps tracker. It's just not nearly as engaging. We were created and born to tell stories and to listen to stories. And so practically, it's just the most effective way that we can communicate. And then when it comes to the storytelling medium, what's amazing, and I think why Jesus was using it, is because everyone can have a different experience and bring that life experience to the story. And now they're interpreting and receiving the story in ways that are individual to them. So when Jesus is telling the story of the prodigal son, you know, we all understand that story in the context of the son ran away and he's received back by the father. And we're understanding the story that Jesus is telling us, but we're also interpreting that story through our own experiences when we were the prodigal, or when we were the father of the prodigal, or when we saw somebody else play one of those two roles. And so your experience with that story is going to be individual and unique more than any other person.
Right.
No one has the experience of that story that you do, and nobody has the experience of that story that I do. You all have the same experience of me basically when I'm like, and the spreadsheet with the next step, like that is educational, it's tactical, it's do this, do this, do that. When the stories, we are all bringing our own life experiences to the table. And so that's where the substance comes. And so Jesus is trying to talk about these, like, you know, big conceptual, like, kingdom of God, ethereal, existential issues. He's like, okay, let's make it something that we can all approach, and it's accessible to all of us. And we're going to use that as a springboard to get to the substantive stuff that I really want to talk about.
Yeah. Oh, in, I love the message. I know this is controversial, but I love the message translation of Matthew 13:13. And the part about that that's controversial is the message translation, but neither here nor there. Matthew 13:13 in the message, basically Jesus, he's asked by the disciples, why do you use story and parables so much? And he says, I use parables and stories to prepare people to receive my insights, is basically how he says it in the message, right? We talked about this offline. Simon Sinek talks about limbic brain versus neocortex. Until my limbic brain, the emotional side of my brain, is engaged, Simon Sinek talks about this from a purchase and consumer behavior perspective, but I think it applies to the church and what Jesus is saying in Matthew 13:13. I share story and use parable to prepare people to receive my insights, to prepare people to receive the gospel, right? The logical reasoning side of that, but parable emotionally engages first. Funny side note, you talked about the two characters in the prodigal son. I resonate with the other brother. Like, as a kid that grew up in the church, struggling on the self-righteousness end of the spectrum, I resonate with that guy. Like, man, what the heck? You gave up your entire inheritance to, what about me? I've been obedient this whole time, right? And so, yeah, there's opportunity within story to carry. Can we trust story to carry the message that we want to communicate? Jesus did that. He trusted story and parable to carry the message that he wanted to communicate. And I think that you see this play out. I've told this story and I used this example on the show before, but you see this play out in the man possessed by demon Legion. Jesus has this transformational, does this transformational work in this man. He's got a demon named Legion who's possessed him his entire life. His whole community, the entire region, knows that this man is depressed. They've tried to chain him. They've tried to bind him, and he continues to break out, so they just outcasted him. Right? He has this transformational work done in his life through Christ in an afternoon, right? He has an afternoon interaction with Jesus. He's not educated. He's not seminary trained. All that man knows is his name's Jesus. I'm pretty sure he's the Messiah. He rescued me from my bondage. And he asks Jesus, I want to follow you and be your disciple. I want to follow you the rest of my life. And Jesus tells him, no, I want you to go and testify of what you've seen here today. And the next time Jesus and the disciples come through the Decapolis, which is the region in which that was taking place, it's the only other time they step foot into that region. And it's the feeding of the 4,000. So that man's story, he runs off and he follows Jesus in obedience to testify of what God has done in his heart. And 4,000 people are prepared to receive the gospel through his story and testimony, right? Potentially 10 to 15,000 people with men, women, and children. The power of story and testimony, not as an end all, not as the only solution, but as a tool that we need to lead with and engage with as we continue to have our conversation and discussion around digital. Storytelling and testimony is incredibly powerful. I mean, in that story, Jesus trusts that man's testimony to prepare potentially 15,000 people to receive the gospel at the feeding of the 4,000. That's a lot of trust put in a single story, right? And so, when I look at how the church is behaving in digital and the content that we're primarily producing and creating and publishing, you've talked about this in an email blast you put out. Most of the stuff we're putting out is promotional. Hey, here's the next sermon series that we're going to do. Come to our sermon this Sunday. Come to our Easter trunk or treat event. Come to our thing. Come to our thing. Come to our thing. Come to our service. Here's our education. Here's our podcast. None of those things are bad things. We're just leading with the neocortex side of the brain. We're not engaging with limbic yet. And story and testimony allow us to engage emotionally, contextually relevant to how people behave in the digital space, to prepare them to receive all the stuff that we're already doing, right? The amount of content we're producing that's logic, reasoning, educational-based, knowledge transfer, our three-point sermons, like we're doing it well, fairly, for the most part, right? We're creating that kind of content on a consistent basis, our felt needs articles, our all the things that we're doing. But we're leaving our greatest asset on the table. When you look at the content being produced by the church in our research, less than 1% of it is story and testimony first content, like real actual story. Now we'll put story labels on our sermons. We'll put story labels on our podcasts, but really at the end of the day, it's not real life transformation taking place in real people's lives. That I think is one of the greatest missed opportunities within the church. As we have this discussion around digital, how do you engage with a populace, an audience in the digital space according to how they behave in the place? They're going to be entertained. They're going to consume story and narrative. They're going to veg out and check out on YouTube through story and narrative. And yet we're leading with our literacy-based logic, reasoning type content, and there's just so much missed opportunity to lead with story first and then follow it up and support it with everything that we're already doing. So, man, storytelling, everybody in my audience knows this is something we're incredibly passionate about. We have a God, and how you've talked today and knowing some of the content you produce, I'm sure you're familiar with Gary Vaynerchuk. Gary Vaynerchuk talks a lot about document rather than create, right? Just document what you're doing. You are doing that with social sermons. You're just documenting what's already being created, right? We serve a God, when you think about our content strategies, we serve a God that is actively at work, always going before us, and is always at work before us. He's transforming life at rates that we could never keep up with. It's not a matter of just creating something out of nothing. It's simply a matter of documenting what he's already doing, how he's actively at work in our people. It can begin to really have significant impact, I think, in our content strategy, in our digital, in our engagement with the lost and the unengaged and the unreached, in our own congregants and our lady. When we see, oh, hey, let's not build so much brand around our primary public speaker. Let's build brand around what God's doing and how he's at work. So, sorry, that was a bit of a rant.
Well, it's coincidentally, we have a communication framework that we teach, and we call it the SSS framework, and it's stories, stats, and steps. And the reason I found that interesting was because I've always put story as the first thing. Mm. It's like before we can make it actionable with steps and before we can make it empirical with stats, we have to make it emotional with story.
Yeah.
Make it personal. And so, you know, you getting a little bit into the neuroscience of it, basically confirms that it made sense intuitively why we did that first, because there are, you know, data reasons behind it.
Yeah.
Human reasons behind it.
Are you familiar with StoryBrand?
Oh, yeah.
Do you use it in some of your stuff? Because when I read your content, even in your sales stuff or any of your landing pages with some of your content, the big thing about StoryBrand that you probably don't know if you haven't gone through the certification process is J.J. Peterson has done his dissertation on narrative theory in marketing. And when I look at how you communicate on your Pro Church Tools site, on your social sermon site, you are using narrative theory. There's a problem, solution, result structure to how you communicate in your stuff that it makes me feel like, man, you've gone through that process. You know the framework like the back of your hand because you're using story in how you communicate what you guys are offering, whether it's Nucleus or Pro Church Tools or social sermons. You're using that in your communication models. And so it's that's just a side note. Kudos to you. Well, Brady, Man, this has been awesome. I know that we got a hard stop at an hour, so I want to be respectful of that. If people want to learn more about ProChurch tools or social sermons or any other things that you're doing, any of the products you guys are creating, how can they get a hold of you?
Sure. Basically, whatever platform you enjoy, you know, consuming content on, if you're a person that likes to watch YouTube, listen to podcasts, follow on Instagram, whatever it might be, we're almost certainly on that platform. So you can find us there. Just search my name, Brady Shearer. And if you are curious about the social side of things, we have a free workshop this year. It's called churchsocialmediaplan.com. That's the URL. The name of the workshop is the one-page church social media plan. Try to condense all that is complex about social media for ministry into a single page. And throughout the workshop, we fill in that one page together. And it's been very transformative for the churches that have gone through it. And so I encourage you to check that out as well.
That's cool.
It's free. So
awesome. Well, yeah, we'll put some of that stuff in the show notes. Can I pray for you as we wrap up today?
Yeah, sure thing.
Father, I just thank you for this conversation. Thank you for Brady and the work that he's doing to guide and lead and just provide insight and expertise for the church on how to be functional in the digital space. We know that there's incredible opportunity for the sake of the gospel and your name. And we just want to help the church. I know that Brady's heart is to help the church function well in that online world. And so I just lift him up to you. I pray for his companies and his businesses and endeavors and his team that you would guide and lead him as he leads his team and as he leads and guides the church clients that they have. Thank you for his heart, for his motivation, for his willingness to answer your call on his life, Lord. Thank you again for this conversation. We love you so much and appreciate and thank you that we get to be a part of what you're doing. And man, that's just so incredible. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
All right, Brady. Man, have a good rest of your day and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. All right, man. Cheers. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ministry Growth Show. If you enjoyed it, we'd appreciate it if you rate and or review us on the iTunes store. And make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you have a story to share with other ministry directors and pastors, or know someone who would be an incredible guest on the Ministry Growth Show, let us know. We love connecting with ministry executives and sharing their wisdom and insight with our audience. Just send us an email at info@reliantcreative.org. And lastly, if you need help telling your ministry story, we would love to share how we can help in that process. Check out Reliant Creative at reliantcreative.org. See you next time.